Max Drake has gone nuts.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I love that car.
Let's all get high on speed and fight some aliens.
Yeah. I've sat in that car. Yeah. I saw Angelina Jolie get into a hot tub.
I suspect those pesky aliens were involved somehow.
Anything can happen in the next half hour.
So here we are, Jeff. An episode of your favourite series, UFO.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly your favourite episode.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly high up there. And I think it's Nosey's quite favourite too, actually.
Look at him.
Yes, look at that. He'd rather be watching an episode of Thunderbirds.
I'm sure he would.
If he nods off to sleep, everybody, I do apologise. He's had a very long day.
But how old would you have been when UFO 1969, 70?
Well, I'd have been about six or 7 years old. And I think at the time I may have been, I think I was living in London at the time. So it would have been on the local, Thames, I assume.
Right.
Was it Thames at the time?
It's quite a dark adult show for a young child to be watching. Were you conscious of that?
Not really. I think anything that's Jerry Silvery Anderson sort of inspired, you know, I'm happy to watch. And I think at the time, there was a lot of confusion about whether it was an adult show or a kid's show.
Yeah.
Because I think people were generally used to Jerry Anderson producing children's programs. And I think when this went out, I think it used to go out, it was a Saturday morning, was it? Saturday morning, initially?
It varies on regions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But there were some episodes that were held back for scenes of violence or nudity or drug-taking, and I can't remember if this is one of those, but there is a bit of drug-taking in this one.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, this was definitely one of the late-night ones. And the last time I saw this on broadcast television was actually in Australia, when I arrived there in 1975, 74. And they ran one late night. I saw Time Lash, and that was the only episode of UFO I ever saw on broadcast TV in Australia. I think it ran on Channel 7. And then about 4 or 5 months later, they had the world premiere of Space 1999, HSV-7 in Melbourne.
Wow.
How about that?
Right.
I remember thinking, wow, the design of everything on space was just uncanny.
Yes.
But I prefer UFO. I think it's got more storylines that are intriguing. I think, and the characters, I think, I think this was Jerry and Sylvia's opportunity to create something really special.
Yeah.
And I think with space, maybe the budget was so high they were restricted because they had to do certain things that in this they didn't need to do.
Uh-huh.
It was Lou Grade coughing up the money and, this scene here is quite funny because you can see it's quite obviously
Stuntman.
The stuntman's there. Look, that's not Ed. He's got dark eyebrows. It's not bad. I mean, it's quite close.
Well, when you think this was probably viewed in black and white
on a very small screen the size of a postage stamp.
There's Mike wearing that skivvy I was wearing when I was about 6 years old. That's probably where I got it from. I mean, there's probably still this episode. Mum, buy me one of those. That's probably it.
And I think this is the return of Norma Ronald, who'd had a few episodes off. She was pregnant.
Yes, in fact, Sylvia mentioned that during the commentary. She said that she had her some time off. They got in Miss Moneypenny, didn't they?
Lois Maxwell,
Well, Lois Maxwell also did the voice on Stingray.
Yes, she did, yes.
So, apparently Sylvia said, oh, you're back. I don't want you back. You shouldn't be back so soon, because she came back only a couple of months later. But that's why there was that gap, because she went off to have a child, so...
Now, I've already seen some locations that I recognise from my time at LMM Block shooting Space Precinct.
The water tower is really obvious.
Uh-huh,
you can see that on Google Maps and stuff. That water tower is still there. And this is one of the car parks, which I think still exists. And it's near where they have the stages, which are now set out for TV shows, I think, because they've got a grid in there now.
Wow.
There's a lot of TV shows made of Hollywood these days.
We have a photo in our archive of, and I assume it's relevant to this episode, of a load of people sitting on hovercrafts like the one that guy was just pulled off. It's in with a photo of with a collection of Doug Luke photos from Joe 19, UFO and the Secret Service.
Right.
So I'm wondering what the context of that was. There's no explanation for that photo. Just a load of people on those hovercraft.
I think that, obviously, if there's some local company that's doing this, they might offer it to the
How can we fit this into an episode?
Yeah, we can put something that looks futuristic and modern in it. There's that hand again. There it is, being driven on by a tractor.
Yeah. So, Chris, we're busy chatting through the episode, of course, as we should, but just give us a brief update of what's happening so far. Strake has gone nuts.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and he's running around the studio. Yeah. Bearing in mind, to all these people he's running into, he is the head of the studio.
Yes,
And he's just doesn't know where he is. He's covered in filth.
I see.
I think also in this scene you can hear the voice of Jeremy Wilkin, who was the skydiver navigator. I think at the very end you hear him voicing the director.
So he's dubbed it over the act, because there's rules about performers doing lines, so it's cheaper if you get somebody that you're already paying money to do a line than actually use.
And that's a Hammer starlet, and she was in The Persuaders as well. I can't remember her name.
And there's a Sylvia lookalike down the bottom there. It's a production.
That's Jeremy.
Right, was it?
Right, everyone, settle down. Settle down.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Oh, right.
Off you go.
Yeah, that hovercraft's a bit incongruous, isn't it? Yes. I wonder where that's all come from. Never
but
seen
it's
it before.
The future of 1980, so they have hovercraft like that.
Well, everybody, that's exactly it. I often used to go to work during the 80s in my
quite,
hovercraft.
Quite antiquated, looking back at it now, yes.
I love these guys dressed up as policemen. Sort of odd. But all these sets, if you look very carefully, as I mentioned to you guys earlier, sometimes you see bits of the UFO set in this.
Oh, yes.
And there's a scene specifically where you can see the interceptor cockpit, which I'll point out.
Oh, great, okay.
But there's also, I think, Sky One cockpit and some other things as well.
Uh-huh.
These are the Bernard sports cars, which were apparently available at quite a premium at the time.
Now, this is just something that's occurs to me several times. These guys are studio security guards.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Foster is presumably to them a studio executive.
Yeah.
Why is he yet running across the studio lot yelling, "Commander! Commander! Come back! Commander!"
Yeah,
Commander.
They shouldn't know about that, should they?
No, that's a security risk there, Mr. Foster.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, see this ladder? That's no longer there.
Oh.
That was taken down some years ago because the roof, which is flat up the top, is now angled. They had some leakage, apparently, and they remade the roof for those studios, so they're now at an angle, so you can't climb onto the roof, because otherwise you'd slip down. So this flat roof, you couldn't do that scene now.
So we can't have a
time-lapse.
See,
it's got all those
day.
Water puddles. Yes, well, those used to seep through, so they had to put a new roof on it. So they took the ladder away to stop people climbing on it. There's Wanda.
Oh,
and she's there. I remember when Wanda did the commentary, she said, as the episode went through my dress, I took one extra button down to the stage where Ed was saying, "Oh, thanks, they're not be watching me now, are they?" Is Ed in it? Is he?
he's
in the show. Oh, right, okay, so I was watching Wanda there.
Right, we're 7 minutes in and we get the title card.
Well, Foster has just discovered that Straker is carrying drugs.
Mm.
Oh, he's on a bender.
He is. Well, at the time, it was quite a thing. I mean, any show to do that, let alone something which is a futuristic science fiction program, which initially had a kid's time slot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your main character, no less.
And, of course, there's Grant Taylor. Grant, unfortunately, was seriously ill at the time. I remember Charles Tingwell told me, because Charles was in the episode playing B.B. James, Mindbender.
Oh, yeah.
And he remembers talking with Grant, and Grant basically said, "I've been given a date." Because he had cancer.
Ah,
so you can see how much weight. If you look at him now, compared to the early episodes, he was quite large and chubby.
Oh,
now he's very gaunt. I think he died about 6 months later.
Yeah. But still wearing the same size costume as when he
first
started.
I think about a couple of safety pins in the back or something.
Yeah.
He's wearing my skivvy again, the other one. Grant, he's got my skivvy. Look, there it is. Yeah. Oh, and so is Mike. Skivvy day. Bring your skivvy to work day. That's what it is. They also mentioned, I remember on the commentary with Wanda, she mentioned how Ed used to find working with Vladek very intense.
Yeah,
because he'd take the scene, basically, Vladek.
Nice. Well, he just did that, tearing open the thing, and it's such a good actor. Such a minor thing, but he does it so sinisterly.
Yeah. It's like a stage actor, isn't it? Like, doing something. Yeah. It's amazing.
So Foster's just
Mike
found
was
out
such a
that
nice guy in real
Straker
life,
didn't come back to the studio.
Yep.
And that's, is it John Lyons from A Touch of Frost?
Okay.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Actually, that's the other thing that's a bit strange. He says, "Oh, he didn't come to this. This is the entrance to Shadow." You mean everybody working down has to go up through his office?
Yes.
Must be a queue in the morning.
Yeah.
It's like, "Get out of my office. I'm busy." Another one comes in. I'm 5 minutes late. Now Wanda mentioned she loves being in this golden thing there. And the ring she's wearing, she still wears to this day. She's worn that since she was 19, that blue thick ring on her finger there.
I see. Wow.
So, and she was just so lovely in the studio. Her and Sylvia, they got on like a house on fire.
Yeah.
And you could tell that Sylvia was very much, you know, in contact with the actors, you know, not just the costumes, but dealing with their problems and stuff. Jerry looked after the shows and the technical side and the nuts and bolts, whereas Sylvie looked after the kind of human aspects of it a little bit. So it was a good team.
Yeah,
it was a good team.
Lovely shade of blue on these walls as well.
Yeah.
You're regaining consciousness.
Oh.
You see
it. So, Chris, how successful was UFO? It was the Andersons' first foray into the world of live action. They dabbled a little with Secret Service, of course, but this is the first full-blown live action series.
Yes.
How did it go down?
Well, it seems to have gone down, crucially, pretty well in the States, which was part of the reason why they started doing a second series, which eventually morphed into Space 1999.
Yeah.
Again, I assume it was successful enough
yes,
here.
Sure.
But again, it comes down to what regions it was shown in at what time. Yeah. And, yeah.
I mean, I think there's generally, I mean, I enjoyed watching it and I thought it was the best thing on TV at the time.
Were you aware that it was from the same stable as Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet.
So. Yeah. And I think it was, well, I don't think you get Looking, I think Looking magazine was a year later, but I do remember, you know, reading magazine articles, Countdown probably or something like that, or even in TV Times. And, you know, whenever you see the words UFO, you think, oh, it's something science fiction-y, because UFO was a big thing at the time, just UFOs generally, unidentified flying objects. And then I think that, you know, it was in the right time slot. I think I saw the first episode when it went out, 1969, late 69, something like that. And thoroughly enjoyed it. And, and I thought, wow, this is really something. And as I say, the opening sequences to these shows are just so brilliantly conceived and edited that they pump you up. They make you want to watch the show, you know. So... but even as the older I've got, though, the more I appreciate the show, because you realise some of the really great little things they've done with the direction. Mm-hmm. And having met some of the directors, like Ken Turner, who did Mindbender, I did a commentary with him on, I think it was Joe 90.
Yeah.
And he was also talking about Mindbender, and he said that when he got kicked off the show, because he delivered the film, and they said, we don't like it. And Sylvia said, you've got Ed and Mike dressed up as cowboys. What's going on there? Didn't really understand what he'd done with the sort of placing them into this person's vision.
I see.
You know, this guy who wrote cowboy books. And so she sacked him. And then a week later, when they saw how great it was, they rehired him again. apparently, Ed broke Mike's ankle on the scene where they lean down behind a thing and have a gunfight.
Oh.
And apparently stepped on his ankle and broke his ankle, so Mike was off. It's amazing what these lead actors would do to get the spotlight when push Mike out of shot.
Absolutely.
Now, these are great little shots.
That's right. And this sequence is an interesting mix of live action and model work. Let's see how it stands
and
up.
And day for night as well. Yes. Yeah. So those scenes were shot in daylight, and they're filtered and high contrast at night. It saves you having to put lights on things because you can't film at night, it's too dark.
Yeah, yeah.
So they film this thing called Day for Night. All the ITC shows, a lot of films at the time, used to do that.
I think it's the Australian DVDs, they have the processed daylight footage for chunks of this episode.
Yeah. You can see Ed's eyeliner on that shot. I mean, this is the thing when you look at something in HD now.
Yeah.
That you see all the things which you'd have never seen on a little black and white TV in 1969.
Yeah. It's more prominent in the Pinewood episodes, his eyeliner, for some reason.
Is it really?
I've always felt so.
Oh, right. Okay. I love that car.
Yeah.
I've sat in that car. I've sat in the actual one, that car. I found it. I managed to track it down. I filmed some sequences with it for a little production I did about the models called The Future is Fantastic.
Oh, yes.
Which was just for fans to watch and stuff. And I actually sat in the car, and I'm sitting in Straker's car thinking, and of course it's a wreck.
Yeah.
You know, it's just awful, rusting all the way through.
Shame.
Yeah. Made of aluminium with a skim of body filler over to smooth it all out.
Okay.
But all the body filler's cracked away over time.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, suspension's rubbish inside and everything. Remember, the handbrake is on the wrong side because it's a left-hand drive car, but it's from a right-hand drive British vehicle, I think a Ford or something.
Oh, yes.
So where Straker's sitting there, if he wants to pull the handbrake on, he has to reach over to where Wanda is to pull it on the other side. Okay. It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great model shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's seamless, really, isn't it?
It is. The model of Straker's car isn't quite as accurate to the actual full scale of Straker's car, but it's pretty close.
Absolutely.
But you look at that, the way it's bouncing around. Yeah. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. And then you get that.
Burnham Beeches.
Yeah. Yeah, not far from here, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Burnham Beeches. All those little locations were around the studio areas. Yeah. Burnham Beeches, because it's a private road, they could film there.
Yeah.
And there are some shots on UFO where they are going along the King's Highway and or the Queen's Highway at the time.
Yes.
And I always wonder how they got permission. I'm sure they didn't.
Well,
I'm sure
exactly.
They just get the camera out.
That's right.
Shoot it.
Yeah.
Get the camera out. Right, Alan, get your turn over.
Yeah.
Because Burnham Beaches is where you got a lot of the Secret Service stuff shot.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah, there's a lot of it there. Well, I assume that having shot Secret Service, they said, oh, well, we know where we can get this shot from and that shot and so on. Away we go.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, on black and white TV, I remember thinking, oh, the TV's something's funny with it, you know, and trying to adjust the air.
Of course.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And that's an odd UFO, too. It's not a normal one, is it?
It's but like it'll be back to normal in a minute. I don't quite understand what they're meant to be doing there when it goes negative.
And then there's a back to a normal one. It's quite strange. There's two different UFOs there. It's quite strange.
And gone.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, I can remember the first time I saw what's coming up and just this. And, of course, that sign is still there. And this area, which is called, I think it's called Double Lodge, which is the original entrance to Pinewood.
Sort of the gatehouse.
Which is still there.
Yeah.
And that still looks pretty much exactly the same now.
But it's now surrounded by much more extensive.
Yeah, and it's very, the main entrance to Pinewood is now a bit further along.
Right,
and they've got, it looks like a drive-in theatre kind of thing now. And you can't just, I mean, I used to drive in through that gate or down the side gate. So I'm coming here to see Ari or whatever.
You
know, get a tripod in the back. You just go in. You know.
That's right.
Now, you have to, you know, get a picture taken and get a sample of blood and give me your shoe size and everything. Honestly, it's really, because they've got so much production.
Yeah.
And they've also divided it up. So, you know, if they're doing something, they don't want people from there seeing what somebody else is doing.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's like got areas now that you go into.
I see. Whereas back in the day, you could work in a particular block and see Richard Gere in the car park, practicing his sword fighting, pop your head into the 007 stage, see what's going on in there.
Absolutely. Free for all.
Yeah.
I saw Angelina Jolie in the back of the tank get into a hot tub, and I was so tempted to just jump in with her so I could say I sat in a hot tub with Angelina Jolie, but I didn't.
You'd have got yourself banned from Pinewood for life.
Well, I probably would have. But what a good way
to
get banned,
today,
eh?
Yeah.
Exactly. These are great, some of these.
Yeah.
Things here with the lockdown.
And a lot of shows like this where people are frozen, you see them and there's always like some movement or something.
Yeah.
Most of the freeze acting in this is pretty convincing.
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? And I think some of them are braced against things.
Yes.
And also, there's nowadays you do it very differently. You'd actually use visual effects to make sure they're frozen. You'd have breath coming out their mouths. You'd have all that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, yeah. I think there's some cigar smoke coming up, which is impressive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one, which is, I'll give it away, that's actually painted on glass. It's airbrushed onto glass.
Okay.
But look at the chair up there in the background.
Yeah.
But all of this is where UFO was actually filmed, these sets and these stages.
Right.
So if you look carefully in the background on some of these, you might spot some things that are very noticeable. And I think it's a bit further along when they're doing main chase sequence. But, you know, this is the way a studio is, with bits of scaffold
and,
you know, grips moving sets around and stuff like that.
Very good.
Commander!
Now he's moving a little bit.
Yeah, and this is a moment that in high definition, you could just about see the wires.
Oh, right. Are there, can you see wires
on
that?
Yeah, I can, yeah. We'll see it again. And there are two sets of wires.
It looks like the bird's been got out by a cat. It's not exactly the most.
Can you see the wires?
I know, I do.
Have another look.
I will have to. Yeah. Oh, do you notice the dent on Straker's car on the front? Near Wanda, just at the front there?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a big dent in the car. They must have crashed it in something. When he reverses back, have a look, there's a dent. Oh, you can't see it on that side. It's on the other side. And there's only some shots where you see the dent. And it's on the passenger side, which is the right side on Straker's car, at the front.
I mean, look at the dust
there.
That's
great.
A nice shot, isn't it?
And I remember as a kid thinking, oh my God, yeah.
So time has stopped, Chris.
It has, yes.
For how? For why?
Well, for everyone at the studio, except for these two who weren't there when it happened.
Uh-huh.
But as to why, I suspect those pesky aliens were involved somehow, but we'll have to find out.
They're very naughty, those aliens. They
get up to all sorts of mischief.
Well, that's what comes of breathing that green liquid, you see. Mm. It's not good for you.
Yeah.
So again, this now at Pinewood, even though the car park's there, there's a lot more buildings there and stuff. Yeah. There's that hovercraft you mentioned. Yeah, with the cigar smoke.
So there'd be a plate of glass between us and the action, is that what you're saying?
Like it's like a little matte shot. I mean, they've airbrushed something on. Also, they've had to make sure there's no reflections on this side of the camera, so they've hung up a big black curtain or something.
There's Ron Pemba.
Ron Pemba.
That dress appeared in several episodes.
Did it? Oh, good.
It did, yes.
Do something like that on waves because they're children, I mean, that's quite something. I always remember that scene with Joe Frazier getting her kit off in that responsibility suit, was it? Yes, one of Alan Perry's. He told me he's still got the underwear. I don't know what he meant by that. I'm a bit worried about Alan.
Speaking of Alan.
There's Patrick Allen. Now, he's a guest star, so I'm assuming he has a little bit more to do than to sit
It's a bit like an episode of Columbo. Whoever the guest star is usually the murderer, isn't it?
Yes. That's a line that always sort of bugs me as well. Yeah. They could have had Skydiver over the base by now. What, the entire submarine? Probably wouldn't do much good.
I remember Aisha saying how hard it was to sit there still.
I think someone blinks around this point.
Yeah.
Take after take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aha, Patrick Allen. Mm. More to him than meets the eye.
Well, that little pen there, it's one of those triangular pens. I like that.
Who's going to blink? Someone's going to blink.
Principle they've used.
Come on. See, Michael Billington's been clever then. He's lowered his eyes to cover it.
So he doesn't blink, that's very good.
Yeah.
Like statues.
It's like nowadays, there's been a few other shows since then where they've done some frozen things and it's been brilliant where they've done it.
Mm.
As I say, nowadays, using blue screen visual effects or AI, you can really do this. Amazing.
Doesn't fit the pattern.
Ah, a clue.
This isn't frozen.
Yeah, just a minute.
Mm. Those Ampex Scotch tapes. Magnetic tape.
They weren't in motion when it happened.
Yes, they weren't moving in time. That's why the elevator works.
Then if we could find a monitor that wasn't switched on.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
It's kind of like dreamlike logic. You just kind of have to go with it, really. Yeah.
Things that weren't moving at the time are not frozen.
Yes, even though, as an earlier episode says, you know, the Earth is moving constantly.
Oh, right.
And also the wind outside, and, the air you breathe. I mean, molecules, we'll forget about that, it's quite a good story.
Yeah. Mm. It is quite something that people mention a few times, how UFO's Time Lash is one of its best episodes. And then we know another show where a story called Time Lash is perhaps not one of its worst hours.
Oh, really? Yes. What's that? Enlighten me.
Doctor Who.
Oh, really?
It's a Colin Baker story. Yeah,
okay. Okay. Has it got Wanda in it?
No, sadly, it's got Paul Darrow in it.
Oh, Paul Darrow! Right. Well, I'll take Wanda. Yeah. Sorry, Paul.
So now they're starting
to be affected. Now, nowadays, you'd slow this down using digital effects and stuff, so you get a slow down effect. So as they walk, you can
see.
Whereas obviously, you're just acting. So it's like $6 Million Man. But I love the way this has been directed as well, looking down long corridors and stuff.
It's really unnerving, isn't it?
Taking their time, The director on this one, who wasn't one of the usual directors, was it? It was a guy who was used to doing a lot of action stuff with ITC shows.
Right.
He came on board to direct a couple of episodes, and this is one of his. And I think that's why it moves along. No, it wasn't David Tomlin. It was, it escapes my mind now, but he was one of the people who used to be the stalwarts of ITC programs and stuff. And and it's a shame, really, because you know, by this time, I think Alan Perry was on doing other things. I think he went back to doing some camera work. And I think they thought, well, we need to get these shows out. We've got the Americans on board. We need to get some big name directors. And in actual fact, the directing pool that they had of Ken Turner, David Lane, and Alan Perry was actually completely capable of doing these shows.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Cyril Frankel,
yeah. I think he did Department S and stuff like
that previously. Yeah,
yeah. I remember Wanda saying, oh, she'd worked with Cyril a couple of times before on some things. So,
scenes of drug taking, Chris.
Yeah, why not? if it's the only way to fight those aliens, you know, let's all get high on speed and fight some aliens. Yes. Well.
It's quite a good way he acts this, where he speeds up his dialogue a little bit and she's going through. By the way, her costume there, Sylvia mentions how she wanted to give Wanda a different look for this episode because she just didn't want her in a silver cat suit or something like that. So she said to Wanda, look, go and get yourself something purple, because apparently Sylvia's car at the time was the same colour. It was the same colour as her eyelash or a nail polish.
Right.
So Wanda went out and bought the outfit that you see there, which I think one of the Italian fans currently owns. I think it was given to him. So, so that's actually Wanda's own outfit that she went out and bought.
Yeah.
You know, King's Road or something like that probably at the time. But it's funny, it looks very modern. You could wear it today and it would look in place, you know, it really would.
Lead line, Colonel. It's built to resist any known force field.
We had a Patrick Allen earlier. Where's... Ah!
Oh, he's good.
Oh, hey, just a minute!
Of course, in most episodes, that desk is not normally there, slanted at that particular angle.
Right.
It's a bit nearer Straker's office.
So do you mean they've cheated it for this episode?
Maybe the naughty production people. After we moved that desk, we had a traitor in league with the aliens put the desk back where it was.
One intriguing thing I've always found, you know the episode where Foster escapes and jumps through the coloured swirly thing behind Straker's desk?
Mm.
Now, was that the idea in the first place? Or did somebody say, I know what we're going to do? Because it's quite a clever idea, isn't it?
Yeah, somebody has always been there.
Because he's got where you're scared of enclosed spaces, claustrophobia. And that developed and they used it in the episode. That's amazing.
And it's little nuggets like that that help to sort of flesh out Straker's character in the sense that he had his own one-man escape
group. Right, have a look at in the background there. Did you see it? Just behind Straker?
Are we going to see
that
it again?
It's covered by that. You can just see, if you wind back a little bit, you'll see a cockpit area. There was a cockpit seat there. I think it's either Sky One or Interceptor.
Okay, great.
And I'll point it out, because this wall is fake. I remember Wanda saying they put the wall up so they could put bullet hits in that wall.
Oh, yes, of course.
You can see it there. There it is.
Oh,
just behind there.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
But there's a cockpit there, and I think it's the Interceptor.
Oh.
I think it's the Interceptor cockpit.
Good
there's
spot.
Actually another shot on one of the angle angles where you can see the back wall of the Interceptor. So wait till she moves out here.
Oh,
it's a bit blurry.
Yeah, definitely a freeze frame job.
Yeah, but there's another shot where it looks back on them. There's a two shot here coming up.
Oh, it's come easy for you, don't they, Straker?
The little sound tracker thing.
That's a wonderful voice to be chasing.
Patrick Allen's voice.
Yeah.
There it is. Right in the middle, Frank. That is the Interceptor cockpit.
Wow.
Yeah. And you can see the bullet holes here. Yeah. That's wooden.
Yeah.
That should be brick or concrete. Look at it. It's wood.
There's the stuntman back.
Yep. Whoa. There he is. Dark eyebrows. Yeah. Right around.
And you would never imagine in early episodes where Straker is very much confined to the office that you would end the series with him in sort of action man mode doing this kind of thing.
And what prompted that change? Was it
just because they found Straker intensely interesting and wanted to give him more to do?
I see.
Which is perfect.
Yeah.
Well, the fact they've paired them up, because originally another actor was going to do the role that George Sewell vacated.
Mm.
And Gary somebody?
Raymond. Yeah.
When I think they got Wanda, I think the idea was, well, we could do this like two-hander with Straker and Wanda. And obviously, from Wanda's perspective, she said at the time, this and the episode The Man Who Came Back were the two episodes she did most of the work in.
Right. Right.
She says she got a kiss from Darren Nesbitt and he's a smoker and it wasn't too pleasant that time in the morning. But
Because it was Ed's suggestion that they get Wanda, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Sylvia, when you see almost the back of a copy of Sylvia there, as a production assistant, that's not Sylvia, it's an actress playing Sylvia, basically.
Yeah.
But I think the idea was she was very pro getting the girls more involved with the roles. Mm. I mean, Moonbase is headed by a female Moonbase controller.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a couple of things in the show, like the episode where Harry Beard, a black guy, is going to be the Moonbase commander, and they talk about racial prejudice aspects and stuff like that. And really, if you think about it, for 1969, 1970, it's just amazing. You're giving women commanding roles.
Yeah.
You're giving black people in control of Moonbase.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite incredibly, you know, and I think Sylvia's idea of, and Jerry's for casting, was to get an international look to the show because that's how they saw the future.
Yeah.
An international organisation full of people from different places.
Yeah.
So you get Anthony Chin doing Skydiver and, and things like that. It's quite remarkable. You don't look so big. This is quite funny, you big man. Don't you know me
yet? And Patrick Allen is one of the few actors who can sort of claim to have done UFO and The Protectors and Space 1999. Even though he wasn't in 1999, he's in one of the compilation movies. They shot extra scenes for Alien Attack.
Yeah.
So that counts.
Yeah.
This is funny, the bit here. Big deal, Stranger. The guy that goes. The guy, the girls, and my little Wanda. Now, Wanda and Sylvia were. There was a bit of conjecture here about whether she actually, you know, fancied Ed a little bit or you know, in real life.
Yeah.
And she says that she often gets fan mail from people saying, were you and Ed's character, you know, your character, was there something going on?
Oh, yeah.
And she says, I think it was more Colonel Lake interested in him than him interested in Colonel Lake.
Mm.
But if the series would have gone on, who knows? Mind you, she did sort of put it about a bit, didn't she? She's going out with Mike Billington's character.
Yes, yeah.
She's going out with what? Once she gets chatted up by George Sewell in the first episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she does get about, doesn't she? Yeah. Sorry, Wanda. And this is great what happens here. This is a brilliant piece of editing and direction in combined with a stunt because you see a shot of Wanda standing here as this car comes up.
Isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
The switch.
And there she is. She steps back. And then that is the stunt lady.
Yes, of course.
Who, according to Wanda, has legs that are about a foot longer than her. But I don't believe it. I think Wanda's the better looker of the two. But that's me. I'm biased. Now, of course, these vehicles, I sat in one of those recently, that two of the vehicles still exist.
Oh,
one's
yeah.
with Palo in Italy, Palo Malaguti, painted up to look like the doppelganger one. And that's the one that Patrick Allen's driving.
Yeah.
And the one that they're in is owned by, is it James Winch? Who rescued it from a dump in the Canary Islands.
Wow.
They saw a photo of it and they managed to connect up and the 2 days before it was going to be put in the crusher, they rescued it, brought it back to England. He's done it up. And I've sat in that about 6 months ago and with Aisha sitting with me.
Yeah.
And what a joy that was to ride around in that.
Gosh.
Amazing. It's been completely restored. And it looks just like, and the only thing is, they couldn't get the plastic dome for the front, so they had to put a couple of little rails. They could get it bent around. Apparently, the plastic they did that with, you can't do that with it anymore.
Okay.
It's not the right consistency or something.
Yeah.
And but everything else on it is great. And to sit in there is such a thrill. Mm. You know, to touch a bit of original UFO thing is amazing. But even the design of this, you look at those guns. They look like they could come out of some futuristic film now. They don't look
absolutely.
Like Lost in Space, which have got these balls on them and, you know, I dare say things like Blade 7, which are, you know, plasticky. These look like...
Heavy duty.
Yeah.
They do.
They look the business, so... Parker's sitting next to me and he looks a bit drunk. I think he's had too much to drink, poor fella.
So, Patrick Allen.
Yes.
Alien.
No.
Oh.
No, he's in league with the alien.
I see.
I'm not entirely sure what it is he thinks he's going to get out of.
I was going to say motive.
An alliance with them. They're transferring some power to him, but I can't believe they'd leave him alive.
Yeah.
Unless he's just jealous of Straker.
I think that's it, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
He wants to be, because all the things
big
like
man.
Big man, yes. man the girls admire. And those bullet holes, apparently Polo found those bullet holes.
Oh.
He felt around the inside and felt where they'd been filled. So that's his one. Yeah, that one there.
They also got lucky with the weather during this location.
But look at the way they're directing. See the camera swings, and then you have the high shot. I mean, that is really nice bit of direction. Then to pull back and show all what's been going on, that is just really nice bit of editing and direction there. Mm. Really is. It throws you off completely. But you're right. I mean, this was shot. This wasn't particularly warm. I remember Wanda saying, it was a bit chilly that day. And but, I mean, they're running around a lot, so you warm up, don't you?
Yeah.
There's another button, I think, that's come off her shirt there. I notice those kind of things.
Will he please it?
Yes.
Well, that's why we can't pin him down. How are we going to find him?
Hmm. Well, we've got to try.
A lot of people sort of often will sort of say, oh, Bishop, you know, he's a bit plastic or wooden, because they make these comparisons with the puppet shows.
Yeah, always.
In actual fact, you look at this, Wanda and him, they're doing a great job of this, acting their socks off.
Yeah.
You know, it really is good. I mean, it doesn't stop at all. You can't keep up with the episode.
You are where I am.
And actually, Wanda looks like she can hold a gun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the other you see in films, and they're holding, you know, it doesn't. She looks like she knows what she's doing there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to meet her in a dark alley. Well, actually, I would like to meet her in a dark alley, but not with a gun.
She comes across as a trained professional military officer.
Exactly.
And if you look at the other, for lack of a better term, ITC girls who might have been in the running for this, I can't imagine any of them fitting as well as she did.
No.
Obviously, it helped that she had been in the first episode anyway.
Mm.
Although she's not quite played the same in the first episode. She seems a bit more helpless there.
Yeah. She looks very capable with a gun there.
Yeah.
She doesn't look like he's... You know, even the way she holds it and fires the gun, the recoil on it, it's excellent. She's done so many things over the years. I mean, apart from appearing as her son's real parents...
That's right,
...in Sherlock... But even things like the Lotus Eaters and things like where she played a spy.
Oh, right.
With Ian Hendry from Doppelganger, obviously. Yeah. And
Doctor Who, she played the incarnation of Death or Fendal, wasn't it?
Oh, right, yeah, of course.
She did several Doctor Whos.
Yeah. But the first film she did, she was saying that she got picked up on a beach by a lady called Dame Anna Nagle or somebody who wanted to introduce her and said, oh, you're an actress. She said, I'm having actress lessons. She was lying on Brighton Beach sunbathing. And that's how they pick up the actors, you see.
Well, often go in there. That's how Richard got the job on Space Priest.
Well, that's how I expected. What, in a bikini, was he?
No.
We did once do a production called Tidal Wave No Escape. I was a visual effects supervisor. This was for Weta in New Zealand. It was before a lot of their big films happened. And we had to get some guy, and his name was Titch. And he had to run out in the street and find the first woman who would come back to the studio wearing a bikini. Can you imagine that? He flagged down a car outside the studio and said, have you got a bikini? Yeah, could you come back? We want to film it. We filmed her against a green screen or blue screen, getting up off the beach with this tidal wave coming. And that's how we got her. Yeah, can you believe it? You want me in film? We'll give you $100.
Yeah.
This was in New Zealand, obviously.
Yeah,
So, half an hour later, she's sitting in a bikini. This is how you cast people sometimes.
Just every prop, or not prop, but every memento in the background here has potentially got some kind of story.
Yeah.
Where are all these books? What were they seen in?
Yeah. What I like is when the stunt man comes off here and lands on that, and then Ed actually jumps. See? Boom.
Yeah.
And that's the stunt man.
Oh, okay.
So he does do part of this.
Yeah.
You wonder why he didn't do more of it.
Yeah.
Because the close-ups you can see,
he's
doing
good
just
with the physical
a good job.
Stuff.
Yeah, he is. He is. And actually, even in Mindbender, you see him running around that thing and he's chasing after Stuart Damon's character playing him. And, you know, he's got this really... I remember Wanda saying he's got a really nice bouncy kind of walk that he does.
Yeah.
You know? But he's a great character, Straker. I mean, out of all the Anderson characters, the live-action ones... You know, I used to get into arguments with people who love Space 999, which I love as well.
Yeah.
And I say, second day on the job, John Koenig, Moonblast out of orbit. What sort of job, what sort of commander is he?
Well, he was basically a guy in charge of a rubbish dump.
Well,
that's
true.
A job description.
Whereas Straker kept the aliens at bay for years.
Yeah.
Look at that. Koenig, second day on the job, off it goes. But of course, the fact is, space has these origins in UFO, and you can see the, you know, like most of the Anderson shows, you know, Thunderbirds, you can see a bit of Stingray in it, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. They all have this kind of common.
Yeah.
And here's something else we learn about Straker. He has a little cupboard with a really powerful gun in it.
Oh, fine.
Just in case.
Fair enough.
Just in case.
And that's something I really like about UFO, and I think it's unique to the Anderson shows, is in, I think, every episode you find out some little piece of the Straker jigsaw
that
you didn't know
that's
previously.
That's true, actually. It reveals itself over the episodes, doesn't it? I mean, you wonder, I don't think they had that absolutely planned, but as they went through, because it was such a tight team of writers and stuff, and you had that commonality of the producer and the production team, it meant, oh, I know, I've got an idea. We could do this with Straker. And I'm sure Ed put some of that in as well. He said, well, why don't we do this? And, you know, I'm sure he did, because Ed isn't that different from this guy we're seeing on screen.
Right.
He really isn't.
Really?
You know, yeah, absolutely. You know, some of the comments he makes, like, you know, there's one where, you know, where somebody escapes and he says, maybe they forgot to lock the door, you know, like I mean, little throwaways. And you think, that sounds like
that's
Ed.
That's Ed Bishop,
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Well, there he is. Oh, this is where Patrick had to be careful about his trousers there, because he reveals very so. She says, Sylvia says something like, you should never know what a gentleman's side he dresses on. And apparently they're all laughing about it, because Patrick Allen, you can see a slight bulge in his trousers, shall we say.
Yeah,
there he is. I think he's very pleased to see Wanda there. Very.
He's having fun.
Yeah, he is. But imagine how much fun it was filming this episode as well for Ed and for, you know, the three leads here. You're just running around chasing things. It's like, you know.
And I wonder what, if anything else, was going on at Pinewood at the time, because they've been quite lucky to have basically the entire lot just do whatever they wanted.
Well, I know that Wanda said that she was surprised one day because Roger Moore, she was in the restaurant or something, and Roger Moore came up behind and went boo or something. And he was there with, and there's you mentioned before, there's a picture of Tony Curtis with Sylvia. And I think they were doing The Persuaders, either the early episodes or doing some early pre-production on it or something like that. So, I mean, that was being made at Pinewood at the time, I think.
Yeah.
So, but there wouldn't have been much else, because I think MGM had just closed. The last production to go through MGM was the first 17 episodes of UFO.
Right.
And Jerry had to do a midnight flick. He had to get all the sets on a weekend and literally put them in a truck and get them over to Pinewood and hide them away.
Right.
Interesting. That's the stuntman is back there for Straker, and we're hiding him a bit behind Patrick Allen.
Yeah, he's a bit further away.
Yeah, I guess Ed's the star. We can't take risks with him. Oh, he's
there
back
he is
now.
There. Yeah, it's quite strange. And these are real little sports cars. I mean, but they've got terrible suspension. They bounce up and down. They go over a little pebble and they go flying through the air.
I think I'll just play that back.
The thing that got me is that was really Patrick Allen with all that debris on him. Now, it's probably all balsa wood and stuff like that, but it's still pretty impressive what he does there. You know, all the dust and stuff. I mean, that would have been the stuntman for the guy coming in, and then you see the recovery there. It's still pretty good.
All our empty boxes have been knocked over, you swine.
For a while, Patrick Allen was apparently one of the most busiest voiceover guys in the country.
Yes.
He had his own voiceover studio.
Right.
Like, before it would be common, which it would be now, he had his own voiceover recording studio.
Yeah.
Because he was so in demand, it saved time. He could just say, oh, record it, you know.
Yeah, do it at home.
Yeah.
It is quite odd. You know, we have this highly rated episode of this series, and we have this extended go-kart chase, and yet somehow it doesn't seem out of place.
It's odd because they've used the blue shadow vehicles, then they're using these. There was a hovercraft in it. It's like, how many other little modes of... There's those chest things.
I reckon they might be from...
Well, it could be, couldn't
maybe
it?
Maybe deadlier than the male.
Yeah.
Oh.
Smoke machine.
Big man. It's approaching Wacky Races level. Of,
yeah, it is,
you know,
isn't it?
What's Dick Dastardly up to now? He's like, he's brought a fog machine. I remember when I first saw this go out on the BBC, a friend of mine actually phoned me while it was on. I had many months earlier tried to get him into the series by showing him Identified. We only got about 10 minutes in.
And he phoned me up to say how much he was enjoying it.
Oh.
This episode.
Yeah.
And he didn't realise it was UFO until the end credits rolled.
Really?
And the announcer said, and there's more UFO next week. I was like, oh, right, this is the same programme. Yeah.
So even though you've got a guy with a blonde wig...
Well, yeah.
Driving a futuristic car.
Right. I guess it just turned the channel over, and we only had four channels in those days. And
I saw one of these vehicles up for sale not so long ago, and they're worth quite a bit of money now.
Oh.
They were originally red colour. They were sporty red, and they've obviously painted them in the Harlington Straker livery. This is a brilliant piece of, like, lateral, out-the-box thinking.
Mm. And very in keeping with Straker.
Yeah.
I think Koenig might have taken a bit longer to work this out.
Was that before the moon blasted out of orbit?
Yes.
Here they come, the more power they transmit to me. I can play time like a trump.
See, what's his motivation for that? So what, you can play time, what's the benefit?
I don't know, he's...
It's just getting back at Straker, isn't it? It's jealousy, I think.
The shadow recruitment drive needs...
They've got to be very careful with their application forms from that one, I think. Yeah. Are you likely to go mad and seem like the aliens? Yes. All right, you're not in then. Sorry. Can't join.
So
the vigorous thing they did with Paul Foster to get him in, all the things they went through, this guy just filled in a form and lied.
Ah, there we go.
That's brilliant. Isn't
it? Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good the way he plays it. He's got the bullet holes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And the way he drops so the key. Fun.
Yeah, and then it starts to move. This is great. And I think it's the real Patrick Allen going around in circles as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you guys...
I think it was.
Or is that the stuntman now? No, I think
it is. That's Patrick Allen.
I think it is. He's very distinctive. Yeah, there he is.
Yeah.
Right in there. Yeah. Back up the ladder again. You're right, the beautiful day they've got. Incredible. Because they probably shot this over about, well, I think about 5-6 days, these sequences.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get, I think there were 2 week blocks, 5 days apiece. And so they probably have 5 days on location, but location was basically go out the door and film it.
Yeah, that's right.
Go on the roof.
So now Straker's got one shot, one chance to bring down the UFO. And luckily, it's one of the rare occasions where they only sent one UFO rather than the usual three. If they'd sent more than one, Straker would have been stuffed here.
He would have. I hadn't thought of that. It's true. Hit it with the molly.
Oh. Yeah, nice impression of the wind being generated by the UFO. I never caught that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
Bit of compressed air.
Very nice.
So they're wondering where their Patrick Allen has got to.
But even the way that's been edited back and forwards with the expression, and that you're building the tension on that.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, having directed a few things since, you know, over the years, you really get an appreciation for how well these shows are made.
Because he could have just fired it, couldn't he?
Could have just fired it. But no, there's that. There's him, a reaction shot. There's a shot of it again. He's trying to line it up.
Yeah.
It's a build-up.
Yeah.
You know?
Now we're back to where he started.
But this would have been, I assume, a bit cheaper to make the most episodes, because that crew would have only had to be on for probably a day.
Hmm.
And then you only had Mike Billington out there and Patrick Allen, so...
What's wrong?
Also, I think the fight sequences are great, you know, the action sequences here. You see a lot of TV and you see fight sequences and it's all a bit play-acting. Yeah. This looks legit.
Quite rough, yeah.
Yeah. There he is. And the cut, to go from that, and he's struggling.
Yeah.
Really nice. Really nice. Wow.
It's all right, come on, it's all right. Now try.
Try and press.
Oh. Incredible.
Yes, General. But there are more things.
But how?
I'm not sure, but in some way they were able to expend a moment in time.
Hmm.
Commander Straker, experience such an extended moment.
Mm. The music's coming up.
Yeah.
That's the end of the storm head. And this is the last episode that was broadcast in Australia when I saw it. They didn't run the long suit.
Oh, right.
And it was only years later that they did, you know, the long suit became... I don't think I saw the long sleep on the original run.
Okay.
It was probably on late, or maybe they didn't run it.
Yeah.
But,
Ron Bemba, not Ron Pemba.
Ron Bemba. Ah, yeah, it should be Pemba, shouldn't
Pemba,
it?
Pemba, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless that's his cousin.
Trianon Ronda Benson.
So there we go. Jeff, how was it watching Time Lash on UFO?
Look, absolutely wonderful. And also, not only does it bring back my memories of when I saw it when I was a kid, but also when I sat there with Wanda and Sylvia at Pinewood watching that. Yeah. It brings it all back to me.
Yeah.
And if you do get a chance to listen to the commentary, any of your listeners or watchers out there, I mean, please get hold of it. It's on the Aussie release.
Uh-huh.
It's on some other releases, and it's really enjoyable to listen to them chatting together. Great. It's great. Okay, great fun.
Chris, in the meantime, where can we find UFO?
You can find it on ITVX, you can find it on Blu-ray, you can find it on DVD, VHS if you've got an old VCR. Marvelous. It sometimes gets shown on television, so yeah, all sorts of places.
No excuse to miss it.
Very not.
It's a rather a distinctive series, isn't it, with a distinctive flavour all of its own.
Yes.
Would you say?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
but guided and motivated by just this wonderful performance by Ed Bishop at the heart of it, which is just wonderful.
If this is your first time watching UFO, let us know, podcast@jerryanson.com. Let us know what you think. But in the meantime, Jeff and Nosy Parker.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. There he is.
Let's get started. Let's go.
Spectrum is green.
That was an Anderson Entertainment production.